Welcome to Defenders, the teaching class of Dr. William Lane Craig. Today, The Existence of God, Part 16. And for more information and resources, go to reasonablefaith.org.
We've been looking at the alternatives for explaining the remarkable fine-tuning that characterizes the initial conditions of the universe. And we saw last time that these cannot be plausibly attributed to physical necessity. The constants and the quantities are independent of the laws of nature, and the best theories of everything, so to speak, that are on offer today allow for a vast multiplicity of different possible universes consistent with nature's laws but having different values of the constants. So the question is, what about the alternative of chance? Could the fine-tuning be simply due to chance alone? According to this alternative, it's just an accident that the constants and quantities all fall into the life-permitting range. We basically just lucked out and are lucky to be alive. Well, the fundamental problem with this alternative is that the chances of all of the constants and quantities falling into the life-permitting range by chance alone are just so improbable that these odds cannot be reasonably faced. Now, sometimes people will object to this sort of argument by saying it's meaningless to speak about the probability of a life-permitting universe existing. Why? Well, because there is, after all, only one universe. And so what does it mean to speak about the probability of the life-permitting universe existing? It's not like you can say, well, one out of every 10 universes is life-permitting, and therefore the fact that the universe is life-permitting is highly improbable, because you don't have 10 universes to pick from. There is only one universe, and so to talk about the probability of a life-permitting universe is meaningless. I think, however, the following illustration from the physicist John Barrow can help us to understand the sense in which the existence of a life-permitting universe is improbable. Let's imagine we have a large blank sheet of paper or whiteboard, and on it we place a single dot, and let that dot represent our universe. Now, alter slightly one or more of the fundamental constants or quantities that has been the subject of our discussion, and that will then describe a new universe, a universe which is characterized by different values of the fundamental constants and quantities. Now, if that is a life-permitting universe, then make that a red dot. And if it's a life-prohibiting universe, then make it a black dot. And then do that again and again and again and again until your paper or whiteboard is filled with dots. And what you discover is that except for a few pinpricks of color, the sheet will be completely covered with black dots, that is to say, life-prohibiting universes. And that's simply what is meant when we say that the existence of a life-permitting universe is unfathomably improbable. Out of the local group of possible universes that could exist, the vast, vast majority of them are life-prohibiting, not life-permitting. Any question about that objection and my response to it? All right, I think that's a very graphic way, an easy way to understand what we mean when we say that the existence of a life-permitting universe is just enormously improbable. Now, very often you will hear a different objection to this claim based upon the illustration of a lottery. People will say, well, in a lottery in which all the tickets are sold, it's fantastically improbable that any one person you pick would win. The odds may be millions to one that any individual person would win the lottery. But if all of the tickets have been sold, somebody's got to win, right? And it would be illegitimate for that person to say, wow, the odds against me winning the lottery were 20 million to one, and yet I won. The lottery must have been rigged. I won by design, not by chance. It would be illegitimate for him to think that the lottery was rigged and that his winning wasn't simply the result of chance. Now, in exactly the same way, these critics will argue, some universe had to exist. And just as it would be illegitimate for the winner of the lottery to think the lottery was rigged because he exists, so for us as well, it would be unjustified for us to think that the universe lottery, so to speak, was rigged just because our universe exists. It wouldn't follow that it was a result of design. All of the universes are equally improbable. Think of all those dots on the whiteboard. They're all equally improbable, but some dot has to exist. Some universe has to exist. And so it would be illegitimate to claim that the universe that exists is therefore highly improbable and therefore the result of design. Now, before I respond to the objection, is there any comprehension type question about the objection? Do you understand the analogy of the lottery with the universe? Joe? Oh, yeah, let's get this on the mic here, please.
Could you clarify again how the barrel illustration gets around that first? I understand the illustration, but it seems like you're still just saying the same thing. Was it because you moved it locally? Maybe I missed something in the articulation is what I'm
saying.
Now,
are you talking about, are you going back to the first
objection? I'm sorry, yeah, is that okay?
Okay. Yeah.
Just clarify.
The idea there is the critic says it's meaningless to talk about the probability of our universe existing or a life-permitting universe existing because there is only one universe. But I think Barrow gives a very clear sense in which we can talk about that. Namely, all of these different possibilities are equally probable. They're all possible universes that could have existed instead of ours, and yet a life-permitting universe exists. And that is enormously improbable. Almost all of the universes on the sheet are black, not red. So a randomly chosen universe ought to be a black one, that is to say a life-prohibiting one. And now this new objection is, well, but some dot has to be real, and so it would be illegitimate for the people in that universe to say, gee, we're so improbable and yet we exist, it must have been rigged. Is there any question about the objection before we look at a response to it? All right. Well, I think actually this lottery analogy is very helpful to us because it enables us to see exactly where the critic has misunderstood the fine-tuning argument, and then enables us to offer a better and more accurate analogy in its place. Contrary to popular impression, the design argument is not trying to explain why this universe exists. It is not trying to explain why this particular dot exists. And the analogy of the lottery, I think, was misconceived because the lottery analogy focused on why a particular person won. But in this case, we're not asking why this particular universe exists. Rather, what we're asking is why a life-permitting universe exists. The correct analogy would be like this. Imagine a lottery in which billions and billions and billions of white ping pong balls were mixed together with a single black ball. And you are told that a random drawing will be made out of this hoard. If the ball is black, you'll be allowed to live. But if the ball is white, then you'll be shot. Now, notice in this lottery, any particular ball that rolls down the chute is equally improbable. Nevertheless, it is overwhelmingly more probable that whichever ball rolls down the chute, it will be white rather than black. And that is the analogy with the universe. Even though every particular ball is equally improbable, it is overwhelmingly more probable that it will be a white ball rather than a black ball. Similarly, out of all of the universes that might exist, any one is equally improbable, but it is overwhelmingly more probable that whichever one exists, it will be a life-prohibiting one rather than a life-permitting universe. So in the case of the lottery, if, to your shock, the black ball rolls down the chute and you're allowed to live, you ought to definitely think this was rigged, because it is overwhelmingly more probable that a white ball should have rolled down that chute. And if you still don't see the point, then sharpen the analogy. Imagine that the black ball had to be picked randomly 5 times in a row in order for you to live. That really wouldn't affect the odds appreciably if the odds of even choosing the black ball one time were sufficiently great. But nevertheless, I think every one of us would see that if that happened 5 times in a row, you'd know that lottery was rigged to let you live. So in the correct analogy, we're not interested why you got the particular ball that you did. Any ball you get is equally and astronomically improbable. What we're interested in is, why did you get a life-permitting ball rather than a life-prohibiting ball? And that is not addressed by saying, well, some ball had to exist or be picked, and any ball is equally improbable. Now, in exactly the same way, we're not interested in why this particular universe exists. What we're interested in is, why does a life-permitting universe exist? And that question is not answered by saying, well, some universe has to exist, and every universe is equally improbable. We still need to have an explanation why a life-permitting universe exists. Any comment or question about that objection and the new analogy to illustrate the argument correctly? Yes, over here, Don.
I'm confused about one thing. Why must any universe exist?
Well, I suppose you could say that there could just be nothing, right? But we're granting this point for the critic. We're saying, all right, let's assume that some universe has to exist. But
you're basically saying we're going to have a lottery.
Yeah, we're going to agree to the lottery analogy. We're going to have a universe lottery, and we're going to agree that some universe is going to exist. But you're right, if you want to press this at a deeper level, you could say, well, why does anything exist? But let's grant the critic that some universe or other is going to exist, and that any universe that exists is enormously improbable. You can still do that, and the argument still goes through, because the argument isn't, why does this universe exist, contrary to popular impression. The argument is, why does a life-permitting universe exist? Yes, Jim?
Does it require that there be an infinite number of universes, or could it?
No, even a finite number. As I remember, the figure that we saw with string theory was that there are around 10 to the 500th power possible universes with different values of the constants consistent with the laws of nature. This is an inconceivably large number, but it's not infinite. And the proportion of these universes that is life-permitting is just virtually infinitesimal. It's so tiny, it's incomprehensible. So, again, it would be like the lottery, in which the single black ball is mixed in with billions and billions and billions of white balls, and one of them is randomly chosen, and lo and behold, it's the life-permitting ball.
Thanks, Bill. I apologize. This may be a clarification on terminology you covered prior to now, but when we define life-permitting, does that mean life-permitting for humans and the conditions that we require?
No, it doesn't, Gabe. And I did address that earlier on in an earlier class. When we talk about life here, we're using a very general definition that scientists use. It's the ability of an organism to take in food, process it, grow and develop, and reproduce after its kind. And anything that fits that definition counts as life. And so that's what we mean by a life-permitting universe. And that's why it's not a good objection to say, well, if the constants and quantities had had different value, maybe different kinds of life would have evolved. We're not talking about the forms of life that exist, but just life, period. And in order for life in any form to exist, on this definition, you have to have this exquisite fine-tuning of these constants and quantities. Okay, one last question, I think, before we close. Okay, down here, real is the last name, but Robert? Okay.
Yeah, you made a statement about 5 black balls in a row.
Yes.
And I don't know if I'm kind of twisting where you're going with it, but I would be interested to see if later on you have an analogy for that.
I wasn't going to push that. I suppose what that would be, do you remember when we talked about the oscillating universe, where the universe expands and then recontracts, then expands again, then recontracts, and then expands again? That would be perhaps the analogy to having the black ball picked 5 times in a row. Namely, imagine 5 oscillations, and each one, by chance, was fine-tuned for the existence of life in it. That would cry out for some sort of a designer. That wouldn't happen by chance. And I think we all see that intuitively. And the point of the illustration is to simply say that if the odds of getting the one black ball are sufficiently small, then it doesn't make all that much difference if you get it one time or if you get it 5 times in a row. It's just that we see the problem more clearly when we think 5 times in a row. But in fact, even getting it once is improbable enough to say that something's fishy here with this lottery, that this was in fact designed. And that's the point of the new analogy and the proper lottery analogy for fine-tuning. All right, well, next time then, what we'll do is look at whether or not the anthropic principle will enable us to get rid of the need for an explanation of the fine-tuning. The anthropic principle is all the rage now in physical discussions of the fine-tuning, and that will lead then into the question of the multiverse or the many worlds hypothesis. So that will be next week.
The copyright for the content of this recording is held by Dr. William Lane Craig. For more, go to reasonablefaith.org.